It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
11 o'clock on your Friday morning. Welcome in. It is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs here on the game. Tyler Head, Wes Mitchell, and Chris Clark along with you. Plenty to react to from last night's first round of the NFL draft. And, well, we won't bury the lead here. Right before midnight, I don't know if Chris was awake for this or not.
Nope.
But a pretty cool thing happened.
Here's the last pick.
The Buffalo Bills have traded the 32nd pick to the Carolina Panthers. With the 32nd pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Carolina Panthers select Xavier Leggett, wide receiver, South Carolina.
I knew he was going to mess that name up.
Now, Tyler, have you ever seen, like, I'm pretty sure they've shown copies of what the card looks like that the commissioner reads.
Yeah.
Right? So it normally has, like, a phonetic pronunciation.
Right.
I think I haven't seen the one for Xavier Leggett.
Right.
But there was a lot of talk about this. I will say this, and I am not you're defending Roger Goodell? No, I'm not. Because, man, did you see his intro, by the way, Roger Goodell?
I did, yes.
Standing with Eminem behind. Eminem had this look on his face like, this guy is lame.
Well,
like
and they do that every year now to, like, deflect the boos a little bit. But like the intro video did, like, they're still going to boo you. You know that,
but
right?
Let's give him, like, the most beloved person
right
there. So I'm not defending Goodell. But I will say, you know our guy X.
Yeah.
He has an accent.
He does.
As we know. And the first time that I heard Xavier say his own name was, like, before the season last year.
Okay.
And he did say, from what I recall, Xavier Leggett.
Okay.
It's kind of, you know, the country. I'm not going to try to do it.
Right.
Xavier Leggett. But Goodell went a little farther, obviously.
A little more extreme. The way that we all pronounce it, I think on the card should read, like, L-A-G-E-T-T. Like, I feel like that would give you the emphasis of how to say it. And Goodell had some complicated names to say in that first round. There was a lot of some of those, you know, guys, the Samoan names out there playing in the Pac-12 on the offensive and defensive lines. Like, he had some tough ones to navigate, and I just had a feeling he was going to butcher Leggett whenever he got to it. No. Fortunately, it was in the first round.
And that was awesome. So you won the buy or sell?
I did. I was the only one that thought that he was going to be a first rounder.
Barely.
Barely. Now,
Panthers traded up.
They did, and I was concerned because the Chiefs had traded up with the Bills, and they took Xavier Worthy at 28, I believe. Now, the Bills were also a team that were looking to get a wide receiver themselves, given the fact that Stephon Diggs is gone, so I thought that was a possibility. But when the Panthers traded up, or basically switched spots with the Bills to go from 33 to 32, I had a pretty good feeling they were going to get Leggett because, again, they had said that's who they wanted with that 33rd overall pick. And, again, they can say they want a lot of different guys. It really just depends on what happens when they get there. And lo and behold, Dave Canales and the new regime at the Panthers did indeed hold true to their word.
So for me and for the others that were not awake at that time.
It was like 11:56, by the way.
I peeked at the clock, and I'm like, all right, we're on pick 20, and it's about 10:15 or something. I'm like, this isn't trending in the right direction for me. But thank you, Tyler, for your service. You stayed up and watched for us. What was the broadcast? I don't know which broadcast you were watching.
I was watching the ESPN one.
Okay, so ESPN. What was the discussion leading up to that pick? what was it like? There's going to be a trade, and it's hey, watch out for Leggett here because of the Panthers.
Yeah, his name was getting thrown around because I know they know that you know, the Panthers obviously wanted a wide receiver, and again, there was kind of a run of wide receivers in those last couple of picks. You had Worthy going to the Chiefs. You had Ricky Pearsall getting picked the pick before by the San Francisco 49ers, which I was kind of like, Ricky Pearsall is good, but is he better than Xavier Leggett? And again, just based on team needs, obviously, but there was a lot of thought that the Panthers were going to end up picking Xavier Leggett. And in fact, right after they picked him, I also have what the ESPN crew, and this is, you know, Greeny and Mel Kiper, Lewis Riddick was on the table, Booger McFarland as well, talked a little bit about what Xavier Leggett has done and what he's going to be able to bring to the Panthers organization.
This guy, I'm telling you, he can fly. He is competitive at the catch point. He can take the shallow cross. He will split the middle of your defense, and you won't see him anymore. He'll be gone. He can contort his body. He can adjust the bad throws. He will block. He's a competitor. He's tough. Look, Shane Beamer loved him down there in South Carolina. Look at his play right here. This is what I believe one of the fastest recorded GPS top speeds in college football. He was gone. When you watch that on tape, it looks like somebody sped up the tape for just him. At 221 pounds? Come on, man.
I find it brilliant. It's pretty. You had Kansas City won a wide receiver. They got the pick from Buffalo and took Worthy. Carolina wants to help Bryce Young. They got the pick from Buffalo and took Xavier Leggett. Now here's Buffalo Center. Maybe Adonai Mitchell from Texas. Vlad McConkey. There's other receivers. I will say this. It ended up being, we said, 19 offensive players in round one. 23 went. 9 defense. 23 offense, 9 defense. Blew that record away.
The very strange night, unprecedented in that regard and in many others. But how about this? How much assistance, Booger, does this young man bring to Bryce Young coming off a tough rookie year?
Well, when you think about Bryce Young, a tough rookie year, here's a guy, Greeny, you can give him the ball short and he can take it deep. You talk about run after the catch. Think about him, as Lewis mentioned, like an A.J. Brown. You don't always have to run the football 30, 40 yards down the field and throw him the ball. You can get him the ball in a plethora of ways. He's going to bring the physicality to that offense.
I talk about the one year he had, 71 catches he had. We put the next two guys on the South Carolina receiver list together. No. They didn't equal what he did. So he was a dynamic performer this year with Spencer Rattler throwing the football.
Right. The last South Carolina receiver to go in either of the first two rounds was Deebo Samuel in 2019.
And again, that's a lot of different voices, a lot of different perspectives, you know, saying a lot of things that we do know about Xavier Leggett from his time here at South Carolina. A versatile weapon, can do a lot of different things on offense, also valuable on special teams as well, which I imagine he's going to at least get a look at doing that, especially with the NFL's new kickoff rules. So a great pickup for the Carolina Panthers, and I know the organization's not in the best place as of right now, but hopefully, you know, Xavier Leggett can kind of be one of those sparks for things trending in the right direction for them.
You got to be so happy for Xavier, too, because, you know, just kind of bringing this thing full circle. I think back to his recruitment where, for a time, it looked like South Carolina liked him. I remember Tennessee had offered, and he wasn't this household recruiting name. Charles Power, a guy from On3 that was then at 24/7, I think was the only person to rank Xavier Leggett as a 4-star. Another win for Charles, shocker. But he was just this big, athletic, raw guy who played, you know, at Mullins at a smaller program, but you just saw the size to speed ratio, and you're like, wow. It didn't even look like for a time that South Carolina might have a spot for him immediately, and they had one, thankfully. And as we all know, it took a little bit of time for him to get his career going, actually until the last year. But Wes and I talk about this story all the time. When X was a true freshman, he's in the 2019 class, I remember talking to somebody who'd been at practice, and they were like, you should have seen the Xavier Leggett kid running to go cover a kick. Like, if we'd have had a stopwatch on him, it had to have been a 4-3. And I was like, And that's something that you always filed away so that every single year that passed where Leggett didn't. And obviously, when he first got here, he was behind some dudes.
Sure.
You know? And you just always had that feeling like, man, if he could put it together, he's an NFL guy, because you look at him.
Definitely.
And then you watch him run. They were just talking about it on that clip. That was probably, what, the Mississippi State clip where he just outrun the entire secondary.
Yeah.
it was always just if this guy puts it together. And then he's just been through so much. He's such a hard worker, a great teammate. And now you look, and he's a first-round pick. Four-year deal, fully guaranteed, $12.3 million with a $5.8 million signing bonus with a fifth-year option in 2028.
And you guys can both speak to this because you obviously got to know him a lot better. I was there for the hour that we had with him, you know, last fall on the Garner Trust Hour. But like you said, just a good guy. Obviously, has had a tough go of it, you know, losing both parents in high school. But he's overcome a lot, obviously. Grinded it out here at South Carolina, waited his turn, and balled out this past season. And, you know, just somebody that everybody's happy to see be successful and hopefully will be in the NFL as well.
My man's got a great smile, too. So seeing him light up yesterday, getting picked, pretty awesome moment. A couple of my favorite kind of Leggett stories over the years, too. One would be just seeing him out there at South Carolina's camps. When basically, so these are like high school camps that Chris and I would cover. The current team would be out there at times. And I remember one of the first times I saw this just massive dude out there just throwing around a football with some of his teammates and just snatching the ball one-handed. And I'm like, who the heck is this guy? Oh, that's Leggett. And I'm like, wait, that's Leggett? This was like very early in his career and looked like an NFL guy at the time, like already just physically. And then same situation, but a few years later, I think this was this past summer, Chris and I were catching up with a couple of former Gamecocks who played in the Spurrier era, and they looked over at me and Chris. We looked over at them. We're like, we know y'all. And so we started talking, and they, as former college athletes, were like, that's Leggett. They're like, he would have played linebacker when we played. And so just hearing SEC athletes have that same reaction just kind of tells you just how physically put together he is. But, yeah, man, awesome moment for him. I told y'all earlier this week that I would be a little bit it would be bittersweet for it to be the Panthers. Because they better take care of our guys, all I'm saying.
Absolutely.
All I'm saying. Man, awesome moment for him last night. What did y'all think of the Panthers trading up one spot to get him?
Didn't want him to get taken.
Yeah, I mean, the Bills are also in line for a wide receiver, and I saw the negative reaction from the Bills faithful that they weren't able to get.
Jack Veltri.
Yeah, Jack Veltri. They weren't able to get Xavier Leggett, and again, you're basically essentially flopping picks there. But, yeah, I mean, it ended up working out for the Panthers, who, again, wouldn't have had a first-round pick otherwise. And I know it pained a lot of people to see Williams go number one and what could have been their pick had they not made that trade a season ago. Hopefully he ends up having a good career at Carolina and just a good career overall, whether he stays with Carolina or ends up going somewhere else at the end of his rookie deal.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you want to talk about it from a Panthers perspective, I think there are definitely red flags with Caleb Williams anyway. Like, that's not a guarantee.
Well, I'm not saying that they would have drafted Caleb Williams, but theoretically having the number one pick overall.
Yeah,
and
they would have drafted Drake May, I think, with the local guy more than likely. But anyway, that's another reality. I just thought it was it because I'm like, all right, if the Bills want to take him,
sure,
they're going to take him as opposed to trading the pick. Like, were other people trying to trade up as well to take him?
I don't know.
I get if you're trading up two or three spots, you're jumping teams. But, like, if the Bills wanted Leggett, they're probably not trading him away. Like, trading the pick away. They're just going to take him.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
I didn't quite understand. I was trying to figure out the logic on it, but maybe they were just like, I mean, maybe they were that dedicated to that thought process that they wanted him.
The Panthers don't always have, as of late, the most sound draft strategy, so there might not have been much strategy.
Well, at least they didn't spend $100 million on a quarterback and then draft a quarterback with the eighth pick.
Hey, I'm not arguing with you.
Whew.
Going into every draft as a Falcons fan, I just hope they don't come away the laughing stock, and unfortunately last night they did. That one's I don't know, man.
I have no words.
Hey, but why do y'all think Kirk Cousins and his agent are mad?
Let's get to that on the other side. There's a lot to unpack from this, as well a lot of things that happened in last night's draft. That's coming up. It is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs on your Friday, reacting to the draft here on the game.
Welcome back in. It is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler Head, Wes Mitchell, and Chris Clark along with you. Talking more about the draft. Going to talk some Gamecock baseball in a couple minutes with our guy Jack Beltry from Gamecock Central. Of course, big series this weekend at taking on the Kentucky Wildcats. As always, you can go online to 107.5thegame.com and register for your chance to win the Palmetto Citizens Federal Credit Union Grand Slam giveaway. $1,000 in the pot as they could set take on the Wildcats this upcoming weekend if a Gamecock hitter can hit a grand slam. Back to the draft, and it was with the eighth pick that the first surprise of the night came.
With the eighth pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Atlanta Falcons select Michael Penix Jr., quarterback of Washington.
I know they were in Detroit last night, but I still feel like that was like an audible gasp from the audience at how surprising that pick was.
Wish it was in Philly because they would have booed it. Especially if it was them that did it.
Was that an audible gasp coming from your apartment?
My wife was home last night and watching with me, and you know, she doesn't understand all the inner workings of the draft, and I kind of sat there with my mouth open at the TV for a second, and she's like, "Is that good?" And I was like, "Well, no, not really." She's like, and I explained it to her. She's like, "Oh, that doesn't make a lot of sense." I'm like, "Yeah, sure doesn't."
Yeah, So. The agent is ticked off, Kirk Cousins is that right?
Apparently, they were not privy to this knowledge until the pick happened beforehand, which I feel like if you paid nine figures for a quarterback a month ago that's supposed to lead your franchise for the next couple years, even if you are going to draft an eventual successor, at least let him know about it.
Yeah, here's my thing. So Kirk Cousins got a giant contract.
Yes.
It's been said... You know, and more of this was said after. I think you're right, regardless, Tyler. Like, you probably give him a heads up.
Sure.
Hey, we're taking a quarterback. Here's the deal. Here's why we're doing it. And it would probably be all the things that you ended up saying after the draft. You know, Kirk Cousins is our quarterback for the next. I mean, they kind of went a little overboard.
They said five years.
It's like, why do you even – five? You're going to be on – you'll probably have four different coaches in 4 to 5 years.
Most likely.
Well, that's the interesting thing is you draft Michael Penix Jr. Does Raheem Morris see him play quarterback before maybe they make a coaching change? I don't know.
We'll see. I mean, Kirk Cousins is going to have a big hand in that. But, like, if you're Kirk, like, you got this giant contract. Isn't it guaranteed or most of it is?
$100 million of the $180 is guaranteed.
Okay, so doing okay with that.
Yeah. And he's 36.
He's going to be the starter.
He is. And most people are kind of setting that bar of, like, all right, 3 years, let's see what happens, decide if you want to go for that fourth year or not. We'll move on from him at that point. But regardless, Michael Penix Jr. is going to be sitting on the bench as a first-round pick for anywhere between 2 and 3 seasons.
Probably.
Well, and I think the part about this that doesn't – like, I get – all right, you have to find a quarterback,
sure,
right?
I don't have a problem with that.
If you think Penix is supposedly, like, they thought this guy's, like, maybe the best quarterback in the draft or something. If you thought that, then, okay, I understand that. But in the NFL, the way you sort of structure how you're spending your dollars is so important that if you're already tying all that money up in Kirk Cousins, like if there was no salary cap and you could just spend however much you wanted and you were just willing to spend,
sure,
that would be one thing. But you tell me the Falcons don't have other needs?
They have a lot of needs, including off the edge. They've not had a double-digit sack player since Vic Beasley in 2016. They've had the lowest amount of sacks over the past three seasons in the NFL. Dallas Turner was right there. Latu was right there. They could have gotten either one of those guys, and then went with the quarterback instead.
Yeah, that's my issue. It's not like it's just there is a lost opportunity. There's an opportunity cost to taking a quarterback there as opposed to filling another need. Now if Penix is Patrick Mahomes, then
sure,
we're sitting here saying, well, it was an odd way to get there, but
again, the payoff's not for another 3 to 4 years at best.
Well, if he's Patrick Mahomes, then Kirk Cousins is going to be standing on the sideline.
Maybe. But at the same time, older quarterback, he's been around college football forever. He won't be starting theoretically maybe until he's 26, 27.
Coming off injuries.
Coming off a lot of injuries from his time at Indiana and Washington. Look, I like Michael Penix Jr. Don't get it misconstrued. I thought he was maybe the front runner for the Heisman for a lot of this past season. But just like, man, I don't like the position the Falcons are in drafting him there because I don't think it helps the team overall when, again, you got a new head coach. You're bringing in a new quarterback. You want to win now, right? Like, I get planning for the future, but this seems a little extreme.
Yeah, 100%. This is kind of one of those things where, you know, people will be like, well, if you really think about it, the front office probably knows more about this than we do. But in this one, you're like, I don't know if that's the case.
I don't know if you guys caught this. When the Falcons made this pick, and we don't have the audio release from it, but Terry Fontenot, the general manager, was seen talking to Arthur Blank. And based off the body language, it looks like after the pick was made, he was trying to explain to Arthur Blank why they made this pick.
I saw that, and people were like, oh, Arthur Blank didn't even know. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not saying he didn't know, but I think he was asking some questions about, all right, what's the long-term plan with this one here?
He didn't ask that before they drafted him?
Hey, look, Arthur Blank is very non-confrontational. It would not surprise me if he was like, do what you're going to do, I'll pay for it.
I'll ask you after on Instagram? Like, I thought that was some social media.
You thought it was a stretch?
Yeah, it's been, look. You can't hear what he's saying. It was interesting body language. I'll give you that.
It was. There was something being said there for sure, and I would be very interested to know what that conversation
but
was.
It was posted as if, like, we're just all going to assume this is Arthur Blank saying, what are you doing, man? I don't buy that.
Yeah.
I've seen this organization do some dumb things, man.
Well, and I think
that's true.
If, you know, it was kind of a weird move for me, but I think what it does show is, first of all, they probably don't actually think Cousins is their guy for 4 or 5 years. He does have a lot of guaranteed money, but it's done after the first 2 years.
Right.
So if you feel like Penix is coming along where you can turn it over, you can be like, thank you for your service, Kurt. Enjoy your $100 million. Thanks for the 2 years, or maybe not thanks for the 2 years, or 1 year, however long. And then you've got a quarterback on a rookie deal that you like.
I mean, when you hear 4 to 5, first of all, if you were a PR person training up your people how to speak and how to present this to the public, the 4 to 5 year comment should have never come out of your mouth.
Way too specific.
Yes, way too specific and way too long. People don't know what country they'll be in 4 to 5 years. So I think that was bad. But I think internally, because this has started to sort of come out from people who really have dove into the contract, it is, to Chris's point, $90 million of what's tied up in Kirk Cousins will be in the next 2 years.
Right.
So then, if 100 is guaranteed, theoretically, you could get rid of him, and it's just $10 million over the rest of that contract. And those specifics are probably why Cousins and his agent are like, wait, hold up, this is not exactly how this was presented to us when we agreed to this.
As a whole, it doesn't make a lot of sense, and 5 years from now, we'd be saying, wow, Michael Penix Jr. is the best quarterback in the entire league, and that was a smart decision to make in 2024, but we'll have to see.
In a vacuum, where do y'all think Penix ranks in this quarterback class? I'm taking him over J.J. McCarthy.
We don't know a whole lot about J.J. McCarthy, to be honest with you.
He handed it off a lot.
I'm maybe taking him over Caleb Williams, honestly.
Penix?
Yeah.
What do you think about, I'm going to dodge the question by asking another one. I mean, what do y'all think about the Sean Payton absolute, it's talking about PR, Wes. I don't think I would have told Schefter that I liked, you know, Knicks every bit as much as Patrick Mahomes. I don't know if I would have leaked that out there if I'm Sean Payton.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm probably just going to go ahead.
He said that?
He said it. It, you know, because he told the whole story, hey, Sean Payton, when he was with the Saints, he was ready to pick Patrick Mahomes. He was going to turn the card in. The Chiefs got ahead of him, picked him, and now he likes Bo Nix as well. He also went I didn't view this part, but I saw the video and I saw the tweet, and apparently Peyton said he was the most accurate passer in college football history. Is that right, Tyler? Can you fact check?
I'll
you
have that fact in your check. Head? I don't know if that's right or not. I'll check that in the break. We got
statistically.
We got to. I know he's got the most starts out of any college quarterback. I know that's true.
Need to get our guy Clark Brooks on here.
Yeah, we need Clark. He'll have a whiteboard breakdown for us.
We got to talk some Gamecock baseball coming up next. But I got Jack Feltry from Gamecock Central. As the Gamecock Central takeover hour presented by Firehouse Subs rolls along on your Friday here on the game. Welcome back in. It is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler Head, Westminster, and Chris Clark along with you on this Friday. You can talk some baseball with our guy, Jack Belcher from Gamecock Central, as we always do. Jack, though, real quick, we've been talking a lot about draft. You're our resident Buffalo Bill here. Your thoughts on them trading not once but twice out of the first round and starting off tonight's second round with the first pick and allowing the Panthers to move up to get Xavier Legette last night.
All right, here's what's going to happen. First off, thanks for having me on. Pick 33, they're going to pick A.D. Mitchell from Texas, right? They need a receiver. You know, we'll see. Maybe Brandon Bean ends up going down a different route and, you know, trades back again. It wouldn't shock me. But the good news is now they have a third-round pick, I believe. And, look, they have more picks. And I know, you know, I was, like, in my head, I'm like, okay, why are they trading with the Chiefs of all teams? And they're giving them, you know, basically their new version of Tyreek Hill. But you know what? They get more picks now, and I have a feeling that we're going to see another trade with those later picks, try to maybe trade up or, you know, maybe trade for T. Higgins. Who knows? Maybe Bengals are looking to shop them around. But, you know, I'm confident. We'll see. I was hoping maybe they'd get Xavier Legette, but, you know, it seems like the Panthers and, you know, X are a match made in heaven. So, can't complain, but, you know, I'm trusting the process right now.
So Jack has slept on it. He has come to terms with it, and now he is good with it. So, all right, hey, let's talk some baseball. Obviously, Jack, we say this every single week, another big series, another great opponent, top five Kentucky, probably the surprise of the SEC so far this year. They just keep winning. How have they done it, man? Looking at the stats, it seems like they obviously pitch okay, but the just top to bottom lineup here looks very, very vaunted for Kentucky.
Yeah, Wes, this is a very solid team, and like you said, in my opinion at least, I think this is definitely the surprise darling of the SEC, if you will, this year. Just very good team, 32-7 on the year. When you look at their, you know, how they've won these games, it's a little bit of everything, right? They're good at home, but they're also good away from Lexington. And I believe they're 13-2 on the road this year, something like that. But it's, you know, it's very impressive the way in which they've won games this year. And I mean, yeah, they're coming off a series loss against another good team in Tennessee, but that shouldn't take away from, you know, what they could potentially do this weekend. I mean, they could easily run in here and, you know, play a good series and sweep South Carolina. That's just how good this team is. But the way they do it, I mean, look, I'm looking at the pitching staff and stuff. I don't think that's exactly the way in which they've won games. I mean, yeah, their pitching's fine, but I think it's their offense at the end of the day. I mean, they don't have a ton of home runs, but they steal bases at a premium. They lead the SEC in stolen bases. And then they also just drive runs in. And, you know, as a team hitting, I believe, .296 right now. So, right around that 300 mark, and they have a lot of good 300 hitters in their lineup. So they're going to be a tough out this weekend for South Carolina.
We've seen South Carolina mix up the starting lineup over these past couple weeks, and this is a Kentucky pitching staff that is very efficient. Don't have a lot of strikeouts, but very good at preventing runners from getting on base and backed up by a really good defense as well. How does South Carolina approach that over the course of these three games this weekend?
It's going to be tough. I think the big thing, it all starts on the pitching side. It really just starts with, you know, if you're going to give up free passes, you have to limit Kentucky on the base pass. I think that's going to be the key to this weekend, because I think Kentucky, you know, I mean, they're going to go out and try to steal some bases, but it's really going to be on guys like Cole Messina and Dalton Reeves to, you know, play well behind the plate and, you know, gun runners down. And it's also going to be big, you know, especially with like a left-hander on the mound, maybe like Matthew Becker or someone like that. to hold those runners close and make sure that, you know, they're not, you know, make Kentucky make their own mistakes, I guess. But at the same time, you know, you have to play good defense in the infield and the outfield. And I mean, look, we saw what happened against Arkansas last weekend where South Carolina made mistake after mistake, especially in the second game of that doubleheader. It leads to runs, and that's probably the reason why South Carolina lost that game in the penultimate series finale. So we're going to see what happens this weekend, but it really comes down to playing a clean game all around and, you know, pitching really well this weekend. I think you're going to get good outings, or longer outings, I should say, from Roman Kimball and Eli Jones. That really should help, you know, preserve the pitching a little bit.
Jack, when we were talking to Stuart Lake yesterday, he had pointed out, in addition to a lot of amazing statistics for Kentucky, especially hitting, as you said, that, you know, really the maybe the one biggest struggle South Carolina has had was hitting with runners in scoring position. I know, you know, that statistic can be a liar at times. I mean, if you leave the bases loaded after you've already scored, you know, 3-4 runs in an inning, right, that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. But it has seemed to be an issue in terms of the batting average, leaving guys on base in SEC play. Do you agree that that's been, you know, maybe the biggest issue for this team? And how can they remedy it, you think, down the stretch?
Yeah, Chris, it's definitely been an issue for this offense this year, right? Because, you know, they get into – the thing with this team is, and I kind of was looking at some stats today, I was a little surprised. I mean, they haven't hit a ton of homers this year like they have been in the past. Normally with this team, it's high homers, high strikeouts, and really no in between. And they leave a ton of guys on base, that sort of thing. It's kind of been a little bit the opposite this year. I mean, they've only hit 58 homers this year, which is kind of a little bit off their regular pace. And even Mark Kingston was noting that yesterday in his press conference. But with this team, it's they lead the SEC in walks, I believe. And from there, they've done a lot of bunting to try to move runners into scoring position, which in most cases they have. It's just whether or not they're going to be able to get that hit and drive those runs in. And for South Carolina, that could really make the difference this weekend. If they execute better in those types of situations, I think that really propels their chances of winning the series, which they desperately need to win. But I do think, Chris, it has been an issue this year for the most part. And I think offensively they've been better lately. I like some of the changes they made with Austin Brindling in the lineup and Dalton Reeves, and Lee Ellis is going to be starting a shortstop this weekend with Will Tippett still in concussion protocol for the weekend. I think it's a more contact-oriented approach, and I think maybe this is the weekend where we see things kind of click for this offense.
You mentioned, Jack, Brindling. I think it's kind of an interesting way this team is constructed roster-wise. Like, I feel like there's a lot of depth in the outfield in terms of guys that are capable, but it's sort of about those guys actually all performing and how do you pick who's going to be out there. And for most of this year, obviously it was Dylan Brewer in center field. Brindling sort of took over last week, had a great weekend, and I mean literally went from like almost not playing at all to being a key guy at the top of this lineup. What can you tell us about kind of his emergence and how that played out? And then the other side, what does that mean for Brewer moving forward?
Yeah, you know, in a short answer, look, Brindling definitely struggled when he came here in the fall. There was no doubt about it. You know, look, with the outlook with him is that he's a contact bat. He's not going to hit for, you know, big homer numbers, extra base hits, that sort of thing. He's going to be a guy who gets on base and swipes some bags here and there, which is kind of what you want as a, you know, top of the order kind of bat. But with him, it's just he struggled in the fall. Mentally, it wasn't all there for him. And, you know, as a result, I think Mark Kingston made the right move at the beginning of the year, giving Dylan Brewer the starting nod in center field. And for the first month and a half of the year, he was probably South Carolina's most consistent hitter, probably outside of Ethan Petry. And Brewer was just on another level, and he was playing really well. And then SEC play starts, and you see a slow tick down in his, you know, his average drops by maybe like 100 points, and you know, he's really struggling at the plate. He's had some big hits here and there over the last few weeks, but for the most part, it's just been a, I don't want to call it a steady decline, but his play hasn't been as good as it was at the start of the year. He got off to a really hot start, and he's been kind of declining. So I feel like this was the right opportunity, right moment for Kingston to go ahead and plug in Brindley. I mean, the worst that happens is that Brindley has a bad weekend and you go right back to Brewer maybe, or maybe Evan Stone, who knows? It's a continuous shuffling until the postseason gets here, in my opinion. But with Brindley, he really took advantage of his opportunity. I believe he hit 500 last weekend, which is really good. Played solid defense. Obviously, you don't want to get picked off twice. But outside of that, it was a really solid weekend for him. And he'll be back in the lineup this weekend for South Carolina.
Absolutely. Appreciate it as always, Jack. We'll check with you next week.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
All right. By the way, got a pair of tickets for this weekend series against Kentucky, college number 4 and 5. Right now, 803-446-100. Wrap up the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour next here in the game. Welcome back in. It is the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler Head, Wes Mitchell, Chris Clark along with you for a few more minutes here. Reminder, the craft beer card is back. Spend $30 a brewery at 12 different craft beer locations. It's $360 value, all yours for just $79. Go to 1075thegame.com and click on the Sweet Deals tab to purchase the craft beer card. Quickly, we do have some news on the Gamecocks as far as the transfer portal goes. I want to follow up on something we mentioned earlier. Bo Nix did have the best completion percentage in college football this season at 77.4%, but for a career, he is 49th overall at 66.4. So I think Sean Payton was a little off on his statistics.
Well, and
there,
we got to make sure that the source was accurate, that I actually said that right, but I'm almost positive that is what I saw.
Well, a coach exaggerated? What?
At least for 2023, he is correct, but for a career, that is incorrect.
How many were behind the line of scrimmage?
I don't have those numbers in front of me.
A lot.
Colt Brennan, by the way, the career leading percentage is 70.4. RIP.
Yeah, man. That was fun offense right there.
That guy was good.
Quickly, as we wrap up, you guys reporting on this earlier this morning on GamecockCentral.com that a new name going to the transfer portal for the Gamecocks, that being Keenan Nelson Jr. out of the defensive secondary.
Yeah, and Keenan himself has already announced that he is going into the portal. And as we talked about earlier this week, Shane Beamer saying at the Welcome Home event here in the Midlands that there were a couple of guys at those sort of end of spring meetings that indicated that they were looking for more playing time and were probably going to explore the portal. So we've seen, since that statement, we've seen Sidney Fugar, and we've obviously now seen Keenan Nelson Jr. as well. And someone, Chris, he came in as a highly recruited guy, was a 4-star in a class that had several highly recruited defensive backs as well. It feels like he was always kind of trying to find his role, but just never quite did. And, you know, at times that was at safety. He, you know, his freshman year, he started that game against Notre Dame in the Gator Bowl as the nickel. And, you know, you kind of wonder, does that give him a springboard into being the nickel next year? Well, I thought it didn't get off to the best start this year against North Carolina, and then kind of settled into a role as a backup safety. And I think when you're a 4-star guy and you're seeing players around you who are the same class as you or are in some cases younger than you that are coming in and playing more snaps, this is kind of your typical modern transfer where it just makes sense. This is not one of those I feel like where we're like, ah, wait, what's he doing? I thought this one made a good bit of sense.
It does for both sides. Because I think, and we might have already started seeing a little of this on social media, Wes, is like, here it goes, you know, type of thing. And first of all, you know, there hasn't been a high volume of transfers from South Carolina this spring. I don't think we anticipated a huge amount of them anyway. But again, we said this the other day, and if you're a knock on wood person, I guess you can knock on wood. But, you know, they haven't lost like, oh gosh, there's a major, major contributor. I think the two transfers that we've seen so far are firmly in Wes's healthy transfer category where it's, you know, hey, they're going to go play somewhere else. And Shane Beamer mentioned the Welcome Home Tour in the Midlands the other night. Hey, there's a couple guys. Now, I don't know if they were Sidney Fugar and Keenan Nelson Jr. specifically, but there are now a couple guys that he had talked with by that point. I think both of those meetings had already happened. And now you've got a couple of guys who've expressed that they're going into the transfer portal. So, like Wes said, Keenan played, you know, he played in 11 games last year, and he started 3 games, including the first two. But after the first two games, the role did diminish a little bit, where he was playing, you know, more on special teams. And when you look around, that was probably more likely going to be his role this year, right? Playing special teams, a backup at, you know, the nickel position, maybe the safety position. And for him, you know, yes, he's a former four-star guy, but you do have to, you got to kind of look past that and say, okay, what was the role for the staff? What was the role for him? And this makes sense.
And when you look at this spot as well as, you know, Sidney Fugar being on the offensive line, these are two areas that are already very, very deep. And we have talked about South Carolina maybe going out and looking in the portal for maybe an additional guy on the offensive line. But even if you weren't able to get somebody to supplement the two spots that you're losing here, you still feel very good about the depth that you have at both these positions.
Yeah, I kind of raised the question earlier this week, and we were talking about something else, and I said, who is the backup nickel? And the answer, if Keenan Nelson was back, maybe would have been Keenan Nelson Jr., I think, potentially. I wonder, let's play it out. Let's say we don't have really a lot of time, but let's say you do feel good about Judge Collier at corner, you feel good about Vakari Swain coming on, you feel good. You obviously got Davis Spalding in there as well, Emory Floyd. Could Jalewis Solomon actually be your backup nickel this year behind a Jalen Kilgore? I think that could be very possible.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense, actually, because you get the sense. Now, he's not here yet, but the staff seems to really like Jalewis Solomon, and everything you hear is they feel like he's going to be a day-one contributor. But Floyd, Swain, they've made strides too. So the more of those guys you can fit, again, about getting your best five on the field.
Again, Keenan Nelson Jr. Entering his name to the transfer portal earlier on this morning. We'll keep an eye to see which other Gamecocks might be entering over the course of the weekend as well. That'll do it for today's edition of the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Halftime show, myself, Terry Ford. More draft reaction coming up next right here on the game.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.